Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto of chapter 3, verse 28. It's a famous verse that's described. This is the Paribhasa Sutra of Bhagavatam. Have you heard this term? Do you know what this means, Paribhasa Sutra? In the wrong book now. Hete cham shakala pumsa, Krishna's tu Bhagavan soyam. Indrari vyakulam lokam, mridyanti yuge yuge. Translations also. And the Krishna, basically, the section of Bhagavatam is describing all different avatars. And it's also listing Krishna as one of the avatars, Krishna Balaram, in the list of avatars. But then, after listing all these different avatars, then it says, of all these, actually, Krishna is the supreme. Even though he's listed. Some people just say, oh, in the Bhagavatam, Krishna is just one of the avatars. He's listed there. But they don't read the conclusion of that section. There's verses 23, 4, 5, 6, 7. They say, so many avatars, and Krishna's in the list. Are you just in the list of all the avatars? But then after saying that, I said, now the conclusion is that all the above mentioned incarnations, ete means chamsha kala, these amsha kalas, ete means these, all that I've already said, these incarnations are either plenary portions, kala, or portions of the plenary portion of the Lord. But Lord Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. All of them appear on planets, whenever there's a disturbance created by the atheist, Lord incarnates to protect the theist. The Sutta Goswami is telling sages in the Nisharanya. So this is a text or a shloka which explains the book's essence. So this is called the Paribhasa Sutra. The remainder of the Bhagavatam must be understood through this text. So whenever you're reading different parts of the Bhagavatam, you try to see how is this part of the Bhagavatam establishing that Krishna is the Swayam Bhagavan. That this different avatar, this different story of this king worshipping this form of Vishnu or this Prahlad worshipping the Shringa, how is this subordinate to or complementary to this point, this main point of the Bhagavatam that's establishing that Krishna is the Swayam Bhagavan. He's the original form Bhagavan. And these different Vishnu Leelas and Vishnu and his Bhaktas or Nisringa and his Bhaktas, they're all just amshas, expansions of Krishna. And this is further explanation of this Paribhasa Sutra. The Paribhasa Sutra regulates something that is not otherwise regulated. It creates a rule or restriction where no rule or restriction previously existed. It is thus a rule, a Paribhasa Sutra, which means a verse. The sutra means condensed knowledge, or codified knowledge. It is thus a rule of interpretation and provides the key by which one may understand the purport of a series of apparently unrelated facts and arguments. Let's read about Chitraketu being cursed by Parvati because he was criticizing her sitting on the lap of Shiva and becoming a demon, Vrichasura, although a demon, but internally his purity of Krishna consciousness was preserved. So what does this have to do with Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam? So what it has to do with it, that Chitraketu was a devotee of Krishna. And he was riding around in this flower airplane with a bunch of heavenly damsels. They were singing bhajans to glorify Vishnu. And somehow it was the Lord's Leela that he wanted to show the greatness of his devotee, so he made him laugh at Parvati, sitting on Shiva's lap. And then he got cursed. But even though he was a demon, he was so much attached to the Lord, he was not attached to his body at all. So he told Indra to cut his head off with a lightning bolt produced by Yudhishthira Muni's bones. So this seems apparently unrelated fact, but actually it's all supporting and explaining the Paribhasa Sutra. This is a very interesting description. A Paribhasa Sutra acts as a lens through which the entire book can be seen. Very interesting, like a microscope. You have some lens, and you have some slide, and that slide is some blood sample. And if you look out with the naked eye, you see a red drop. If you look under the microscope, under 500 power or 1,000 power, then you see in that red drop so many little cells and vacuoles and all these things. So that lens of the microscope enables you to perceive into the drop of blood and see a variety of things going on there. So the Paribhasa Sutra is that microscope, is that powerful lens to see the whole Bhagavatam. The Paribhasa Sutra dictates how all succeeding points in the book should be interpreted. And then the author's true and consistent intention can be understood through the book's Paribhasa Sutras. There may be even more than one. The entire book's meaning can be then understood by applying these sutras. Without them, we may see only unrelated stories and inconsistent philosophy. What's the Paribhasa Sutra of Gita? I remember hearing one time, and it was something like Aham Sarvasya Prabhava Mata Aham Sarvasya Prabhava Mata Sarvam Pravartade Iti Matva Bhajanti Maham Buddha Bhava Samanvita. Everything comes from me. I am the source of everything. Everything comes from me, and everything is resting on you. That's in the Chatushloki of the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. That's the first one, number 8. Number 8. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matas sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajanti mam buddha bhava samanvita. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. In other words, I am the source of everything. That is everything. The wise, everything emanates from me. The Buddhas, the Buddhis, the wise who know this perfectly engage my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. Bhava samanvitaha. They worship me with all their hearts. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's also a Paribhasa Sutra there. That's in the first chapter. And that's verse 4 of Adi Lila. Do you know that one? What is that one? Anarpita. Anarpita. Yeah. Anarpita. Anarpita, is that Hindi also? Because that means not bestowed before. Arpan, what does arpan mean? Worship? Oh, so it's Hindi makes it easier, because anarpan, not offered, not bestowed. Anarpita charim chirat karana yavatirna kalo samarpayatam unat ujvala rasam so bhakti shriyam hari purata sundara duti kadamba sandipita sadavriya kandare spuratu va shachinandana. Hari 1:4. May that Lord who is known as Sachinandanan be transcendentally situated in the innermost chambers of your heart, resplendent with the radiance of the molten gold. He has appeared in the age of Kali by his causeless mercy to bestow what no incarnation ever offered before, the most elevated mellow of devotional service, the mellow of conjugal love. So Jiva Goswami says that Sridhar Swami accepts Bhagavatam 1.3.28 as one of the Bhagavatam's Paribhasa Sutras. In the Krishna Sandarbha by Jiva Goswami, he's telling that it is not that the Bhagavatam contains only a few isolated descriptions of Sri Krishna, rather almost half the book, including parts of cantos 1 and 3, are dedicated to descriptions of Krishna. So, besides cantos 1 and 3, who describe about Krishna, why does he say half the book is about Krishna? Jiva Goswami is saying half of the Srimad Bhagavatam is all about Krishna, plus cantos 1 and 3. So why is he saying almost half the book? He's saying half the book because there's 18,000 verses in Bhagavatam. And the 10th canto is 8,000 verses. Or 9,000, plus the first canto and the third canto. So altogether, almost 50% of the Bhagavatam is all about Krishna.
Means 10 equals 10,000.
Yes. 10th canto is 9,000. There's 18,000 verses. So 8,000 or so in 10th canto, and the other 1 or 2,000 are in the first and third canto. I mean, there's many subjects in those cantos, but the ones that specifically, Krishna is the source of all incarnations, there's different chapters. And you add those all together, and you get another couple thousand. And it shows that the Bhagavatam is a book about Krishna. Even though Bhagavatam deals almost exclusively with the theme of Krishna, it is neither boring nor tedious. It's rather wonderful. The essence of Bhagavatam can be found in the shloka 138, Ete Chamsha Kala Pumsa. By comparing the Bhagavatam's text to an army, and Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam to the monarch, who is the general of that army. In this way, Jiva says, I have described the army of Srimad Bhagavatam and its commander. So the army is all the different shlokas. And the Senapati, the Senapati is this shloka, Ete Chamsa Kala Pumsa, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, Indari Vekam Male, Vinayanti Yuge Yuge. So this is something about Parivasa Krishna, or the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this part here describes the qualities of a disciple. These are some random topics I was reading, I thought were nice. As Narada tells of his previous life, his first canto, 5th chapter, 21st verse. And because he had served a group of Vaishnavas during Chaturmasya, and this is also Chaturmasya, and he was a Sudra, you know, born a low class lady. When he served a group of Vaishnava Brahmanas, Bhaktivedantas, and they were observing their Chaturmasya vows at the inn where his mother worked. Although the sages were Tulya Darshan, which means balanced vision, impartial, Narada's qualities impel them to bless him. And Krishna is also impartial, it says in Gita, 9th chapter. Samo Dhammasta, no, it says, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu Name Dreshustya Priya. Samaham Sarvabhuteshu. He said, Samaham, I am equal to all living entities. So Krishna is impartial. He favors everyone. He gives air, light, water, food, digesting, everything, protection, every living entity. But someone who turns his face towards Krishna and tries to love him and serve him, then he naturally, like a mother may love all children and to her capacity she'll feed them and help so many children, orphans and others. But if one child turns towards her and becomes dependent on her, and is always calling out to her and say, oh, Mata, and glorifying her, you're so kind, you're giving me so many things, then it is nature. It is not a imperfection in God. It's called an alankar. It's an embellishment. It's an ornament of God that he's partial. He's impartial, but he's partial. So contradictory qualities can be harmonized in the form of Krishna. He runs, but he has no legs. He walks, but he has no legs. He accepts offerings, but he has no hands. He's Brahman, Para Brahman. And he eats, though he has no mouth. But his eyes are everywhere, but he's nowhere. All these contradictions. So the same way that he's partial to his devotees. That's his ornament. So the sages, they were Tulya Darshan, but Narada was too cute. Like anything little is cute. So his qualities impelled them to bless him. So what were the qualities? So the qualities that Narada displayed were actually the ideal qualities of a shishya. And when the shishya displays these qualities, then he captures the heart of the guru. And the guru feels more inclined towards blessing. Although he's impartial to all, he gives all teachings and the classes are for everyone, but he may give special instructions or classes to those that are more saintly in their behavior. He was self-controlled, sober, and possessed the sweet spirit of seva. That's a triple S. Sweet spirit of seva. Which is something often lacking, you see, in people. They don't have much seva bhava, they call it. Once, with their permission, he ate the holy remnants of their food, and it destroyed his sins. By serving great souls and hearing of them describe Krishna's activities, Narada became purified. He found himself deeply attracted to their nature. This is how it works here. You want to become like somebody. Like people want to become a movie star, they want to become a rock star, or whatever. They want to emulate. They see, hear, understand, and they feel attracted, so they want to be like that. So he was associating with these sadhus, and he liked them. They were gentle, they were learned, they were austere. They were also joyful and funny and humorous. But they had nothing. They had no house, no home, no clothes, a small bag. They were obviously detached and renounced and pure. And those things attracted him. He said, oh, I like this. I like them. But I'm trapped with my mother. And I'm young and I'm dependent on her. How could I leave? But I just like them. So he became purified and he became deeply attracted to their bhav, their sabhav, their nature. Gradually developed the same spiritual attraction and taste for Krishna that they possessed. This is what happens. There's also another point that the disciple, he gets the bhava of the guru. Just like the wife, she wants the heart of the husband. So she gets the heart of the husband by submissive service. Then he gets by serving his tongue and genital. And he's pleasing him in these two major departments of material sense gratification. That's why there's so much stress in India on being a good cook. Because that'll keep the husband trapped. But if she's only a good bed partner, then he can think, oh, she's not a very good cook, so I can go here and there and satisfy my tongue in this restaurant or another restaurant. And since she can't cook on anybody, maybe somebody else can be a bed partner. So the West, they don't have much, they don't tie them up very much. But in India, there's heavy emphasis on the daughters. In the old days, nowadays, different. But the daughters had to learn cooking and very well and expert, and they were heavily chastised and forced to learn. Because it's Brahmapra, their mother knew that she's trapped her husband because of these two departments. If there's only one, trap for the lion, then you can only catch one foot. But if you trap both feet, then you can't go anywhere. More traps. So this is what happens, that the disciple serves a guru, and his service traps the guru, catches his heart. So then he receives the bhava in the heart of the guru. The bhava is the guru's attraction for Krishna, his interest in Krishna, chanting and speaking and serving the Lord. That same bhava comes into the heart of the disciple, like father, like son. So you see, so many Prabhupada's followers are like Prabhupada. They're always traveling, always preaching. They have disciples, they have temples, they have centers. They're doing the same work as the father. They picked up that bhava. And they can't even think about sitting in one place doing bhajan. Oh, Prabhupada never did this. What is this? And they would feel rather guilty to do that. Because they feel this is too much independence, this is too much not pleasing Prabhupada. So they have their understanding like that. So he became, by the association of pure devotees, all obstacles are removed. The obstacles which prevent one from entering devotional service. And we can see in our own lives we may face different obstacles. But somehow by the Kripa Shakti Murti, the pure devotees of the Murti are a form of God's compassion. And the Kripa Shakti, or Kuna Shakti, Guna Shakti, Kripa Shakti is a power, it's a potency. And like any Shakti, it can do things. Power can do something. Heat is a power. The power of heat you can do a lot with. You can cook your meals. You can heat your body, heat your house. But if you don't have power of heat, then you can't cook. So this Kuna Shakti is a power, and it does things. It changes people's lives. It changes their, removes obstacles and changes other people's hearts and paves the way to success in their devotional practices. So what's going on in someone's life is largely due to the mercy of Guru. That's what we always say, oh, Guru Kripa, that my wife has changed like this, my husband has changed like that, my life has changed like this, towards the good. Shubhada, Kleshagni. It's towards auspiciousness. And this is not my doing, because I was doing alone whatever I was doing, but I was going nowhere. And somehow or other I formed a partner, an alliance with this person. Now so many things are happening. Because of ego we forget why it's happening, we think we're doing it. But we were alone at Swatantra, Akila. We had no alliance with any higher authority, spiritual authority or sadhu. And we were just creeping along doing pretty much nothing. No real practice, no real study, really no tangible progress. But then we associate with any sadhu, the bigger the sadhu, the better the fortune. But then our life changes in a diametric way. You see, wow, things are opening up, things are happening. My wife's becoming favorable, my husband's becoming favorable. My parents aren't so negative and this and that, and one by one. And it's all the mercy of the sadhu. God is always there. He's always in the heart. So for 20 years, he's in your heart, but nothing's happening. God's there. You're there. You're trying to do bhakti. You're trying to do something, but nothing's happening. God is sleeping. So you can't say, well, God's everywhere. I'm trying to serve God, so he'll make arrangement. But this is his arrangement. The devotee comes when we're sincere and showers the mercy on one, and then he makes progress. Mercy is God's. Mercy is coming from God. It's like a mercy cloud, the cloud of rain. The rain cloud is there in the sky, but the lightning bolt pinches it. you know, pokes the balloon and the water comes out. So the lightning bolt is Guru, and the cloud is Ghanasham. The cloud of mercy is his mercy. The ocean is his and the cloud is his. But clouds come and go. They go over the head and they don't rain. It rains the next parvan's over. Hundreds of clouds go over. Look at the clouds. So many in Vrindavan, 1,000,000,000 clouds pass by and go to Rajasthan and drop the rain. They come from the south, this huge cloud bank coming in 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, then it goes. You call 7 Delta, it's 7 o'clock. Oh, it's raining like anything, 7 o'clock. Watch out. Same clouds. Yeah. So some chemistry happened there where they dropped the rain. So it's a chemistry. The Guru's always, Krishna's always in the heart. Or some chemistry happens, some reaction happens where the, it's Kripa. Kevalam, Guru Kripa, he Kevalam. There's nothing but the mercy of Guru. He punctures a cloud and the rain falls on our head and we get progress. So all obstacles are removed by association. By the association of pure devotees, the neophyte devotee becomes practically enriched, with the transcendental qualities of the pure devotee. Which, what does this mean? Okay, what does it mean? Okay, it's a bunch of jargon. You become enriched with the qualities. It means that, which means attraction for God, becomes attracted to God's name, fame, qualities, and pastimes. Infection of the qualities of a pure devotee means to imbibe the taste of pure devotion always in the transcendental activities of the personality of Godhead. This transcendental taste at once makes all material things distasteful. So this is a proof that someone is getting the mercy of the pure devotee. Is that he's saying, oh, you know, I don't want all these things. No, and he didn't tell me anything, but I just want to be a pure vegetarian. I don't want to eat this kind of food. And I want to eat prasadam. I don't want to eat this boga. And these movies are, I don't want to go to the movies anymore. And these stupid newspapers are all nonsense ideas. Waste my time and fill me with agitation and worry and anxiety. So many problems in the world, people suffering and buildings falling on people and babies getting raped and murdered and eaten. I don't want to clutter my mind with all these distractions and negative thoughts. And I just don't want it anymore. I want to read this. He gave me this book, this Bhagavatam. I want to read this. I find satisfaction in it. So like this, so much mercy comes.